Lori Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had, so it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul. Today, I have sort of a personal story, and this episode's going to be about lack, not abundance, the anti-abundance. So this is something that's been going on for about a year and a half in our family. And it's been, you know, for my brother-in-law, who is the person it happened to, it's been pretty traumatic, to be honest. It's like one of those things that happens in your life that you hope never happens, but it happened to him. And I'll never forget when my husband, who is his brother, got the call. It was January of 2020, right before, as you can imagine, right before the pandemic hit. So not only was he dealing with this horrible event in his life, he was dealing with the pandemic. So it was kind of a double blow. So this is a story of embezzlement. And you read about this in the papers, but you never think it's going to hit you. And it's a tragic to me example of someone who felt she didn't have enough and had to steal to have enough. That she not only stole money from the firm that she worked for, but that she stole money from friends, that she stole money from friends from she had worked for. She was like the right hand woman of this firm, paralegal, did the books, and didn't have a lot of oversight, which, you know, lesson learned there. But when you're in a small firm, people wear a lot of hats. And, you know, I think there was trust there. And after being at the firm for, wow, I think she was at the firm for, I think I had heard 19 years. So significant amount of time. And she had been stealing for a number of years, they found out, but it spiraled. And so, of course, that's when they found out, is that she became greedier and greedier because nobody was looking. And I think she thought, I can get away with this. So we had the court date of sentencing last week, and there is now closure. And so I wanted to talk about that. I was thinking about this and thinking about sharing it. And maybe it'll help someone out there. Maybe it'll help someone who isn't overseeing their books. And there were red flags by everybody, but they ignored them. It's like the little voice in your head says, something's not right here, but then you ignore it because you're too busy and you like talk yourself out of it. Oh, no, she wouldn't do that. She's been, you know, she's a trusted friend. So the way it went down is we got a phone call, or my husband got a phone call from his brother. And I only heard my husband's part of the call, but I could tell it was bad. And I could tell that money was stolen. And, you know, it was just funny because my intuition kicked in and I knew it was brother, even though, you know, he didn't confirm it was brother. And I had a feeling that it was this woman because she caused a lot of drama in the office. And that's another sign, as somebody, like if I were to think of anybody in his office that, you know, could potentially do this. And the crazy thing is, and this makes me feel horrible, but she reached out to me when I was a Beachbody coach and she wanted to sign up and order Shakeology and do an exercise program. And she actually became a coach. I think she thought, oh, I'll do a little side money. But then I think her thinking was, oh, no, it's easier to steal than to like work hard and try to sign people up to be Beachbody coaches. So she drank Shakeology. She drank Shakeology for quite some time. And so I'm thinking, wow, she was using my brother-in-law's money, stolen money, to pay for her Shakeology. This is like crazy. I mean, so the court sentencing was fascinating. I went just thinking she was going to be handed a sentence, but it was actually a little bit of a trial because there was victim testimony. One of the lawyers got up and talked about the damage to the firm, the damage emotionally. The woman, she's one of the lawyers. She was also one of the ones who really did the forensic accounting on how the money had been stolen and how it had been moved around accounts and how it had been siphoned over to her different accounts and even her husband's account. And although they say he didn't know anything, we all believe that he must have been pretty like blind to what's going on with their finances, which some people are. But there was huge amounts, like thousands of dollars being, you know, siphoned around to different accounts. So in total, she embezzled almost $700,000. And this is a small law firm, and that kind of money can take a firm down. So when this happened, there was so much fear of what's going to happen. Is the firm going to fold? Is, you know, they couldn't pay the people. You know, they had to get money into these accounts because she stole from real estate escrow accounts, like real money that they owed people. And of course, there is insurance, but insurance doesn't cover a lot of money. And there is, you know, time that it takes to get that money. There's proof. Insurance requires proof that, you know, they need, you know, what's happened. Why do you need this money? So, and then they spent about $125,000 just fixing everything, just like hiring somebody to do the forensic accounting because it was so complicated. They had to hire somebody. There's, you know, like you think of forensics in crime. This is like forensics in like how money was shifted around and where it went and when it was taken and when it was, you know, withdrawn and when it was deposited. I mean, she's a smart lady. I mean, she was clever as could be. And the other thing they found out was that the stealing went back. So the bank records, they could only go back to 2000 and I think it was 15. And they could only prove transactions from that point forward through the bank. Now, what that came out in the trial or in the forensic accounting is that there's like 80, I think it was 88,000, if I'm, you know, somewhere in the 80s, that was still unaccounted for and missing and couldn't be attributed to anything. I mean, can you imagine this? I don't like that kind of job. I can't imagine somebody who does that and has to like, I guess it is kind of like investigation work, right? And so couldn't find this amount of money. And so they believe that she was stealing before 2015. And so like early on, so for several years, this was going on. And then, like I said, in the last year, it really skyrocketed. And so she was taking like, you know, six figures and shifting. And so that's what ultimately happened to her is that the bank, it was so suspicious that the bank called my brother-in-law and said, something fishy is going on here. I think you need to come down and look at this. Well, her desk was right outside his office and she overheard. And well, actually he came out and said, hey, the bank's calling. There's something fishy going on. Do you know anything about this? And she was like, oh no, what's going on? So then anyways, he's like, well, I got to go down to the bank. So he went down to the bank. She packed up all her stuff and left and never to be seen again. So they didn't even know the passwords to get in their accounts. So this is a lesson to make sure that anybody's doing your books, you have access to all the passwords and that you are auditing that work. So, it was so bad. They had to, I don't even know. It's a small firm. It's less than 15 people. It might even be less than 10. And I think they had to let a couple of people go because they couldn't pay them. And then they scrounged up enough money to pay the people that they could pay. And there was, I think there's three lawyers in the office or maybe four. They had just hired a new lawyer. And so they basically didn't take salary for a few months until they could get everything back in order. And can you imagine, one of the lawyers, she testified that this woman was her friend. Like, she considered her like a family member. She said she took care of my kids. She had three children during the time she knew her. She had taken care of her kids. They had gone on walks and shared personal things. And she was a confidant to this woman lawyer. So you can imagine the hurt and betrayal just from that. You know, if it had been $100,000 versus $700,000. So, and then it was COVID. So what happened with COVID is that, and we live in a fairly small town. So honestly, the police department, I thought, was pretty negligent. Somebody in the police department should have hired forensic accounting, but they didn't. So the firm had to hire it. They hired one and they weren't doing the job right. So they had to fire them and hire another one. So this all takes time. And every time they tried to find out anything about the case, they would be really rude and they would say, stop, you know, you can't call us. Don't call us. You know, how's that for customer service? The police are supposed to help you. And there's a lot of good police out there. I was married to one. But yeah, they were not getting any support, any like comfort level that anything was being done. And this woman, nothing happened to her for a year and a half. They didn't freeze her accounts. She kept spending the money. I could see her on social media. She's like living large. She's paying for her daughter's wedding. She's going to trips to Mexico. She is, they apparently renovated their kitchen. I think this was before it all came down. Paid for a very expensive private school for her son to go to in high school. So all of this money that she had stolen she was spending, and she was living life, you know, large. And so, and that's hard. That's hard when, you know, you love somebody and you see him going through this, and then you see somebody and you know, I know it affected his wife, and, you know, fortunately she has a job. And so they had her salary, but, you know, to go months without salary and then, you know, see that somebody that you trusted, it just hurt. I mean, this is, my brother-in-law is one of the nicest people that you'll ever meet. And I remember when he was dating and getting married to my sister-in-law, they're like a year behind us when they got married. And I remember her telling me, he is one of the nicest people I've ever met. And I was like, oh, because I feel that way too. I think he's just the nicest person. And to have somebody like this, who's so nice and such a great guy. I mean, he used to be a minister. He was a minister, and then he became a lawyer. So that's kind of a weird, switch of careers. But he's super smart, and he's just like, he would do anything for anybody. And he trusted this person, and she totally betrayed him. So, you know, how do you recover from that kind of sort of betrayal? And how can you trust somebody again? So anyway, she was going through COVID, and she was living large, having a wonderful time. And they kept postponing stuff because of COVID. And then, of course, we were worried that she wouldn't get any sentence because of COVID. You know, the COVID cases were, you know, their jail is a confined area and COVID was spreading in the jails. And so we were like, oh, she's never really done anything before. You know, this is kind of a first time offense, even though it's happened over a period of years, it's a first time offense. So, yeah. And so we had these worries that, is she ever going to get, convicted? Is she ever going to get penalized? You know, I love the law of cause and effect. And I'll talk about this in a minute, because, you know, what you reap, what you sow, it's the law of karma, right? It's like, you know, if the universe is, you know, if you're following that universal law, you know, it's going to get her, and, you know, in some way, but you just have to trust it. Right. So, but that was a painful period of time to watch. And then, so she actually pled guilty. She couldn't do otherwise because that, you know, it's so obvious they had the proof, right? So so the sentencing was finally in this month, and it was really a powerful thing to witness. It was really a powerful thing to witness, you know, the people who were betrayed to feel like a sense of justice, like a sense of closure, especially because this has been going on so long. And the firm, fortunately, is now thriving. And she did pay restitution of about $275,000, but she paid that through money that her family and her husband apparently got some inheritance and land, and he sold that. And then, from my understanding, some of her siblings, family members helped supplant that. So how would that feel as an individual when you are basically, you know, asking your family to pay for the money that you stole? Ugh, it's just a no-win situation. I can't imagine. So there's three laws at play here that I wanted to go back to, kind of the universal laws, and, you know, because this is such to me a clear story of living from a place of lack, living from a place where you don't feel like you have enough and you have to steal from somebody else. You have to take and hurt somebody and betray somebody that you supposedly love. I mean, like she had been working for my brother-in-law for so long. She was like a sister to him. And to feel that you are so lacking in life that you have to take and hurt these people, and you're not even thinking about, you know, the outcome of those actions, except like for selfishness. Like, I'm just going to take it all and I'm going to live large and have a great time. And in the court, in the sentencing, she was given an opportunity to speak. And she, of course, she was crying and she looked at everybody and she said, "I really thought the insurance would pay for it." And I was like, I thought, well, that's not going to help her, because that the judge is listening to this, right? And he's, you know, she would have stolen anyways. I mean, it didn't matter. She was still going to steal. That lack mindset, and I don't, wherever it comes from, you know, she said she was getting therapy and there were some childhood issues, and I'm glad she's doing that and I'm trying to understand and unwrap and, you know, change the behavior and the beliefs that she has in her head that are causing her to take these actions. But it was so, so sad to think that, you know, it didn't matter, you know, she was still going to do it. And that I can't imagine also living that way in fear that you're going to be found out. Like, how can that be? And she was hiding this all from her husband. Supposedly he didn't know a thing. And I don't know how he would think that she was making all this money. But I think she was doing it in enough smaller chunks. And she might have been telling him she was getting, you know, she was getting paid more than she was getting bonuses, who knows what she was telling him. But I know spouses can be really in the dark about finances. So if you are, don't, you know, get the light on. But so the number one universal law that here is the law of cause and effect, the law of karma, right? Karma is gonna get you. So karma is going to get you. And if you are doing something, betrayal, stealing, things that are harming somebody else, it's going to come back to you in some way, shape, or form. And with her, it was kind of like the legal system did its job. And I will tell you that we thought she was going to get maximum 2 years in jail. So she got a 20-year sentence. And she had 12 were suspended, and eight, she has to serve 8 years, three in prison. So three, she's not, you know, if she gets any, she can ask after 3 years. I don't think there's any good behavior type of aspect to this. And then she can, the rest of the 5 years, she has to have house arrest. And, you know, I think she has to have an ankle monitor and supervised, you know, but she can be free outside of jail. So, I mean, can you imagine? I mean, this is a 59-year-old woman being sentenced to 3 years in prison. And apparently a year will be in the local jail, and then she's going to go off to the penitentiary. It's like her life is, I mean, it's different. It's no more living large. Talking about living in a situation that nobody would ever choose. And when it was all said and done, it was really sad because I think she thought there might be a chance she'd get off, or that she'd be like just, you know, house arrest and not prison time. And I saw her ask the, you know, they come to, when you get sentenced, the guards come to you to take you. She didn't get handcuffed, which I'm kind of glad she didn't, because, you know, there's no need to do that. But they came to her and she asked them, and I can tell that she asked them if she could say goodbye to her family, and they said no. And she turned and I saw her, she mouthed, they said no. So that she couldn't even hug her family goodbye. And hopefully she did that before the trial began. This is part two of my conversation with you about the embezzlement. I was interrupted at that last comment by my husband, who needed me for something. So he normally is really good about interrupting me when I'm doing a podcast. He doesn't really know what I do in this room, but I'm usually recording and he usually steers clear. So I had a very busy day and I couldn't get back to the recording. So I am finishing it up now. So re-listening to that last part, I was saying where she was wanting to say goodbye to her family. And, you know, you go to a place of such empathy when somebody, even though she's done the stealing and betrayal for years and years and years, this is the point at which you're like, you know, she's a real person. She's a human being who people love her. Their lives are changing because of her actions. And it's really a no-win situation. So for anyone, and there is closure, which is good, and you feel justice is served, yet you know lives will never be the same. And because she's 59 and her husband is probably similar in age, and he is very obese, he had trouble even walking to the stand to do his testimony. And so part of me is thinking, and she's such a rock for her family. It seemed like she was kind of the one, the ringleader, so to speak, socially and obviously financially. And, you know, his person's gone. And, you know, you love each other through thick and thin. And so regardless of what she did, he loved her to her core. And I think she recognized that. And, you know, I can't imagine what she was going through as she not only betrayed the law firm, but betrayed her family. I mean, in a way, she was being deceitful. She was doing things that ultimately led to, you know, her being in jail. And so when I'm thinking about her husband, I'm thinking, you know, health-wise, is he even going to make it 3 years? So it's just, you know, it made me sad. And I know that it made my brother-in-law sad because, you know, he's got a big heart and what could have been, and she could have still been a big part of that law firm family and been, you know, getting raises and, you know, living within her means, which she clearly didn't think she could do, which is a lack mindset. So I was thinking about how the different laws of the universe played into it. And of course, you know, I talked about the law of cause and effect, which is the law of karma, and how you reap what you sow. And it's such a clear and obvious message with that, just the title of that universal law. And no matter what you reap, you'll sow. What you sow, you will reap. So in other words, your actions have an effect, and it will equalize in the end. And I believe that, and you know, a lot of people get, you know, they can't forgive. And if you forgive, you just let the universe handle it. Forgiveness is for you. It's not for the other person. If you can just forgive, and I think my brother-in-law's, you know, he's in a place of forgiveness. And so let the universe handle it. They will get their justice. even if it's in another life. So I read a book about afterlife, and where souls go after, and you know, everybody has their own beliefs, and you know, I accept and I celebrate whatever beliefs you may have, but we all have our own beliefs based on how we were raised, and you know, what our parents thought and who we were exposed to, and what books we've read, and things might change as we get older, we get married. But I do believe that our souls are everlasting, that our souls, and that we've come back into the human form for different reasons, for our souls to evolve, to our souls to learn more, learn lessons. And that before we come here, we have an agreement, and we agree that in this life, I'm going to, you know, this is going to be my purpose. This is what I'm going to be learning. This is what I'm going to be contributing to. And sometimes what your life becomes is something from a previous life, you know, payback perhaps, or, so if, you know, if you know, if you're looking at somebody and that you feel they've betrayed you, and you're not seeing in your own eyes that they're getting, justice in your eyes, the universe will take care of it in some way, shape, or form. And so the other universal law that I thought of was the law of polarity. So if you're not familiar with this law, it's like there has to be opposites. And one of the reasons there has to be opposites, which I love this because it's so true, you have to have sadness to know what happiness is. You have to have these opposites to really appreciate and understand what the opposite spectrum is, right? So light, dark, those are just some easy ones to like figure out what the opposite is. Hot, cold, you know? So, but this isn't a good example of the polarity of trust and betrayal, the two opposites of a spectrum. And when you get betrayed, you so much, I know so many people who have had betrayals in their life, and one of their highest values is trust. So yeah, you don't really understand the depth at which you appreciate trust until it's been lost. So I thought that law of polarity really played out in this as a good example. And then the law of unwavering faith. And I love that law because that is a law where, and a lot of us have a hard time with faith in terms of like trusting the universe, trusting the process, trusting that all will be good, and control is an illusion, and you can't control anything outside yourself. You can control your choices, but you can't control the choices of others. You can't control the actions and decisions of others. Let the universe handle it. Be faithful that all will be good. And in this case, you know, it had an outcome that was, we felt deserved. And even though, you know, you do bad things in the world, and we have a justice system to correct that. Thank goodness. You know, can you imagine living in a world where there was no justice? And it seems in some cities that's kind of how it is here. But where I live, we still have law and order, which is I'm very thankful for, having had a police officer as a husband. You know, my ex-husband, who's a wonderful guy. Yeah, and his birthday was yesterday, so I wished him happy birthday. So yeah, she chose her path, and her path led her to now where she is and what her future for at least the next 3 years, which is away from her family and in prison, and then the near future after that, which is not having real freedom, you know, being monitored, and she'll have to go back to work regardless of, you know, she hasn't worked the last year and a half. I think that hurt her as well. It showed that she didn't have the remorse that she, you know, she spoke that she had the remorse, but she didn't, her actions did not show remorse. Actions speak louder than words, right? So she said she was too depressed. She didn't look depressed on Instagram when I saw her photos. Although, you know, they say your Instagram's your highlight reel. So she's definitely got her highlight reel going on social media. But yeah, she chose it. And now she's having to live those choices. So yeah, it was hard to have faith in the process. And we doubted it a lot along the way. But it was a very great day of, you know, vindication and closure, but also very, very sad. We didn't, you know, it's funny because you think you go into these things and you think, oh yeah, yay. And you come out really feeling not good. And so it just, you know, kind of wish it didn't happen. And I think about what my brother-in-law learned from it. Cause you know, you think when this is something I teach my students is, well, I want them to always look at their mistakes as what did they learn from them? What lessons, reframe them and look at them as lessons. Well, one of the things he learned is to, you know, audit his books and make sure that there is oversight on whoever is doing the books. But yeah, he learned, I mean, his marriage is better. That's a tough thing on a marriage. And, you know, his wife supported him, you know, felt sorry for him. You know, they leaned on her in terms of financial support, which, you know, I think the viewpoint was always, oh, he's the breadwinner. And, you know, we need that. And then you have a different perspective after this happened. You reframe it. It's like, oh, we can get through anything. And isn't that a good feeling to have, even though you went through hell? So I guess the moral of my story here is make sure there are any like little hints, red flags, because there were red flags. There were like whenever they were about to hire somebody and to help her, and she got really angry and defensive about it. You don't think I can do the job? And reactive. And there were a couple other signs too that they shared. So when there's those little hints, whispers, I call them, pay attention. And always, always, even if you're going through a hard time now, know that it's for a reason and there are lessons in it that you not only will help you with a new perspective, but will help you help someone else, because that's what our lessons are for, right? Our lessons are for us to teach and help advise people we love, maybe people we don't even know, neighbors, our kids, our parents, our spouses, you know, anybody. I'm a talker. So I can like, if I have learned a lesson, I'm very freely giving it to people that I chat with that I might not even know very well, you know, just meet. And I'm like, oh yes, I had that happen to me. And this is my experience. So yeah, everything that happens to you is something that is of value in some way. So that's it. And I hope you enjoy this episode about anti-abundance. What can happen when you're not living from an abundance mindset, when you don't think that there is enough for everyone, that you feel you have to steal and betray people you love, that there's no trust there in the universe coming from her. So maybe she'll learn about that. Over the next 3 years, she'll certainly have time, right? All right. Talk to you later. Bye. Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own Not Your Average life.